Okay, we continue in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf Ches. We got up to through Pasuk Yud Ches. We're in the middle of Shmuel giving all the reasons of why did you bother me? Why did you have to bring me up from the dead, as it were, because of all your concerns? And he's showing him how all his concerns are not necessary, because he knew the answers to everything. And therefore, in Pasuk Yates, he says, he deals with the first of the concerns, that the Plishim were going to fight with me. So in Pasuk Yates, he says, V'yitain Hashem gam es Yisrael imcha b'yad Plishtim, and Hashem will give over also the Jewish people with you in the hands of the Plishtim. U'machor ata uvanecha imi. And tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. Gam es machni Yisrael, yitein Hashem biyad plishtim. And also the camp of the Jewish people, Hashem will give over into the hands of the plishtim. So, why is he, first of all, it's a little bit of repetitive. It says, v'yitein Hashem gam es Yisrael imcha biyad plishtim. It's already saying he's going to give them over. Then it adds the words, gam es machni Yisrael, yitein Hashem biyad plishtim. So it's interesting. It's kind of repetitive. I'm not sure I have an answer for that. But the Malam does explain why the Jews are going to be punished, because they also contributed to the Avera. Because the people also, when they fought Amalek before, the people had mercy on Amalek. And they were the ones pressuring Shaul to not kill Agag and to spare the sheep. And more than that, they should have protested Shaul's actions when he disregarded what the Navi wanted. So therefore, So this is why he's responding to all this. Why have you requested to speak to me? You know all the answers to everything. It's all obvious. Please, I'm coming to kill you, and that's it. So then, that was dealing with that. But then, when he adds next point, when he says, "Umachor," and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me, he says, you should know it's a decree, and that's it. Tomorrow's going to be the time. And you will be with me, and also the Jewish, and your sons will be with me, and the Jewish people are going to lose their battle tomorrow against me as well. So it seems that the first half of that pasuk Yates is describing that the Jewish people are going to be given over because of their avera. You know, they've done averas, and I guess the second half of the pasuk is saying, and indeed they're going to lose as well, and that's. That last half of the pasuk is not moving on, and is telling him really what Shaul wanted to know. He wanted to know what's going to be, and he says, this is what's going to be. Okay, it's a lot on these last couple of psukim that needs to be discussed over here. Where to begin? So we'll start over here, continue along with all this medrash, all the medrash, discusses all this. It's all, if you want the source for this, all is Vayikra Rabba Perek Chavav. Goes through all the psukim and discusses everything that's going on over here. So in Pasuk Yud Zayin, let's back up to Yud Zayin, where Hashem said, listen, Hashem's doing what he said he was going to do, and he's ripping the kingdom away from you and gave it to the one, to David. So very fascinating medrash here. Amar Lei. And so Shaul, that's in between the lines now. Shaul responded to Shmuel, wasn't happy with what he said. He says, "Vales halin malei kadmaisa dehava malei." This isn't the first. This isn't. You're not telling it to me the way you told it to me the first time. When he first sinned and didn't destroy Amalek, he says, "Kadhavis gabei have a summer." When you were by me, you said to me, "V'nasna lareicha tov mimecha." You said, "I'm going to give it to your to the person who's better than you." But you didn't mention it being David. When I lost the kingdom, you didn't say who it was going to. You said you were giving it to somebody who's better than me. Ukidain, but now, at omer li David. But now, you're using the same words, but now you're saying David. And then you're saying, why am I so surprised? Why after you're for the dead? I already told you this. I already told you, you lost your kingdom, and it's going to David. He says, wait a minute, you didn't tell me it was going to David the first time. It's going to somebody better. So, omer lei, so Shmuel gives a very enigmatic answer. Karavina gabach havina ba'olam desheker. When I was talking to you, I was talking to you in the world. We know the mystics call this world the alma desheker, the false world. I was speaking to you in the false world. V'hava shemiyah mimeni, and you heard from me. Malin Shkarm, false words. In a false world, you hear false words. The Havina Doch Minach, because I was afraid of you. The Lo Tik Tolosi, you shouldn't kill me. If I would have said to you then, when you didn't destroy Malik, that your kingdoms were given over to David, I was afraid you were going to kill me. Ukedein da ana bolam de kushta, but now that I'm in the world of truth, leis at shmiya mimeni elamili de kushit. You'll only hear from me words that are true. Whoa. What kind of medrash is this? But Shmuel say, well, you know, I was in the false world, so you didn't hear the true answer. Like, what kind of answer is this? And what kind of question? And first of all, the question's hard to understand. So what does it matter? I said David didn't say David. What's the difference?
It wasn't false.
He said it's going to somebody else. But Shaw has a big tine on him, big complaint. Now, if you would have told me it's going to David, I wouldn't have any complaint. And Shmuel says, well, Shmuel's talking like a politician now. He's saying, you know, in the false world, I couldn't tell you the truth. That's why they're going to kill me. What is going on? So the Musa Nevi'im gives a very beautiful interpretation on both ends over. So I'm going to read you a bit of it and get a beautiful shot over here. So what was Shaul's complaint that you didn't say specifically, that Shmuel didn't specifically say it's going to David? So he wanted to answer based on a Rambam, famous Rambam that you're aware of. We learned in Hilchos Yisodei Torah. He says that when a prophet issues a prophecy with words of punishment, remember, if we have to know if a prophet is telling us the truth or not, what's the litmus test? How do you know he's not a liar? So if a prophet makes a statement in the future, for the future, regarding something bad happening, and what if it doesn't happen, it doesn't necessarily mean he's a false prophet, because Hashem could have had mercy, and people could have done tshuva. Bad prophecies don't always have to happen. I mean, if nothing changes, they will happen. But if a prophet issues a bad doom and gloom prophecy, and the gloom doesn't happen, it's not a proof that the Navi's a liar, because people go to the Tshuva, and that's the purpose of prophecy. On the other hand, if the prophet prophesies something good's going to happen, that always has to happen regardless. If it's a public prophecy, it must, that's the rule. You can ask questions on the rule, but that's the rule. And therefore, if a prophet would say something positive and it doesn't happen, then you know the prophet is a liar. Okay, very good. So now look how he plays it so well. He says, now Shaul, he complained like this. He figured that his kingdom was not going to be removed from him. Why? Because what did he hear? He heard a doom and gloom prophecy that my kingdom is going to be ripped from me. So facts going to be ripped from me, first of all, you didn't say who's going to take it, number one. So therefore, that prophecy could have been nullified through tshuva and good deeds. If I would do tshuva and good deeds, it's not necessarily have to happen because it was purely a gloom and doom prophecy. But now that you're telling me it's been given to David, so it's not only it's a negative for me, but it's a positive for him. Right. And therefore, it would have to come true. So if you would have told me in the beginning that it's coming to David, then for sure I would have accepted your prophecy. Because even if it's bad for me, but it's good for him. And good for him has to come true. And if you would have said that, I wouldn't have held on to the kingship. Because then, how could I argue on that? And maybe that's why purposely you said, why couldn't you have told me who it was? If you knew I was losing it, you also knew who was going to. So Shaul says, I figured you didn't tell me who was going to because you want to make it exclusively a doom and gloom prophecy. And if that's the case, then I knew all the time I had a foothold to be able to regain my kingship. So that's why, you see, because otherwise the question always was, which we never really addressed properly, is if Shmuel said you're not the king, so finish, step down for goodness sake. Shmuel said it, step down. What do you mean? Shaul, you know, at least then was a much bigger tzaddik than he was at this point in the game. He really didn't do any bad affairs. Okay, he didn't destroy Moloch. We already discussed the whole complexities and how the Yetzer threw everything he could at him. And, you know, you have to judge him very favorably on that first sin. But then once the Navi tells you, you know, you're finished, so throw in the towel. Go give it over to David HaMelech. And as things show that David is going to be the king, I mean, he could, the handwriting's on the wall. So why didn't he give it over then? Because he never was told it's going to David. Who better than you? Could be my son, Yonason. And could be I will do tshuva. And all these tests, maybe I'll do tshuva. Although, unfortunately, I don't know how Shaul could ever think he did any tshuva since that prophecy doesn't. Although he did get rid of the witches,
yeah.
Okay, until now. But he was pressured. He was pressured, and he did. You know, he did fight other battles. I mean, he was still the defender of the Jewish people. But so that was always that out, as it were.
Rabbi, up to this point, Saul did not know that David was going to be the king.
He was not told by the Navi it's going to David.
Yeah,
he said, you will lose, it'll go to somebody better than you. That's all.
But wait, didn't we say that other people knew that David
was the king?
No, and people, people sensed the pulse, the political... political climate was changing, but nobody knew. They assumed, you know, oh, David's very successful, and he had supporters. He also had the ones who weren't supporters. Abigail felt, you know, she was a Neviah. Maybe she felt that David was going to be, but it wasn't like, you know, placard all over it. For sure not. Shaul was still the king, but there was a sense. You know, David is his rival, might be the king. But we never really said that people knew for sure David's going to be the king.
Of course,
he knows, you know, he was jealous of David, and he thought David wanted the kingship for him.
That's why I tried to kill him.
Right, but till Hashem says it goes to him, I haven't lost it. And maybe he thinks his tshuva is to kill David. Maybe does. You know, if you remember, there's a whole stream, you know, again, when you're trying to defend your position, rationalization becomes an easy thing to do. Now, what I never said this either, but what could be one rationalization? Yeah, David, he's a red, fiery looking guy. He looks like Esav. He's a very Esuvian-like character, which is nothing wrong with that per se, because if Esav would have done things proper, they're very much, David and Esav are very much, the difference is, David had good eyes, and he did whatever Hashem said. But besides that, him and Esav were identical in Koichus, and, I mean, if Esav would have acted like David when Esav, in his lifetime, you know, history would have been different. And David really, you know, why the Melech Mashiach comes from everything else from me? Because he really had the Esuvian-like qualities, and he developed them properly. And he became the great tzaddik. And he was everything Esav was meant to be, and more. In a good way. In a very good way. And I say, even though David will see, he will make mistakes, he does incredible tshuva on them. And we all learn tshuva from David HaMelech. So, you can figure Shaul, he's looking at this David as an Esav character. You know, especially with all that Lashon Hara he keeps hearing about him. Right, remember, you got to always remember that Lashon Hara makes, believe me, makes everything distort. It doesn't take a lot. It just takes one little nuance to distort an entire reality. So, and who's telling it to him? The Av Bezdin, the head of the Bezdin. Doeg's telling him. Avner's telling him. These are great people. It's not, you know... You know, Israeli generals who don't have any Torah. These are people who are incredible Torah knowledge people. So they're supporting him. So he thinks, it's an Esav. It's an Esav over here. He's cunning. Remember, Esav does everything nice on the outside, but he's so cunning. Esav, remember, Esav dressed up, according to Hasidic form, with a white Bekesh, Mamish a Hasidic Rebbe. So David's like a Hasidic Rebbe too. He's a tzaddik, he's this and that. But he's scheming behind. That Moab blood is going to come out in him. You can't totally blame Shaul for thinking that way. He has a lot of history behind that to prove that. And he has, right?
But it makes it even more stark. If he knew or thought David was going to be specifically left out of the prophecy, then he's going to think there's a reason he was left out. It's
yeah, because he's not the... No, and David's not the king. And all this is a false... kingship, and I got to put it down.
But it gives him room to do tshuva.
It gives him room. All these things. So therefore, he complained.
So wouldn't it have been better if Shaul? Shmuel would have told him.
Okay, can I finish? Yeah, okay. Let me finish. I'm still in the middle. I want to finish.
Doesn't make sense. Some of this stuff.
So therefore, Shmuel answered, "I didn't tell you that David was appointed because there was a very strong likelihood that you would have killed me, and you would have killed David." And Shmuel himself was afraid to go and anoint David. And Hashem had to give him an ulterior excuse. Don't say you're going. He's going to ask you where you're going. So just say, there's a family simcha I have to go to attend. Don't say what you're doing. Because Shmuel was afraid. Therefore, I didn't tell him the truth. Okay. So now, but that explains the first half. At least now we understand the first half of the Medrash. We understand now what Shaul was upset about, what he was critical about. But now we got to understand the second half of the Medrash. So I understand. So Shmuel is justifying not telling the truth. So therefore, if you look carefully in the Medrash, the Shmuel said, because when I was living in the world of falseness, I said a lie.
That's right, that's another thing.
Is that what he said? Let me read again what he says. While I was in the world of Sheker, Havashmim, you heard from me words that were lies. What does that mean? So he explains it. Let me explain. Give me a minute. So he said, he didn't say, I said lies. You heard lies. Because Shmuel was careful. He didn't say a lie. He just said he gave it over to someone who's better than you. Now that's not a lie. That's clearly not a lie. That's absolute 100% truth. He just didn't say all the truth. And there was no need for him necessarily to say all the truth. Right? He hid a little bit of the truth. And he didn't say explicitly what's going to happen. And therefore Shaul had a place to make a mistake as long as it wasn't said to who. So really, who was the one who fooled himself? Shaul fooled himself. And it wasn't Shmuel who said the lie. Oh, by the way, as I'm learning this medrash, you see how mamish the lessons are. The Alma de Shikra. All the Swarm HaKadoshim talk about the world being the Alma de Shikra. Alma de Shikra, things aren't as they appear, and everybody distorts everything. You live in an Alma de Shikra, you know, if the truth is, if he would tell Shaul HaMelech that David is going to be there, Shaul would have killed him. Would have killed him. Because it's the Alma de Shikra.
Shaul would have killed him?
Believe me, if Shmuel tried to kill David, and David didn't do anything wrong, and Shmuel would get up and say, you know, we got a new king instead of you. You know, if Shmuel thought that, remember, we learned many moons ago, we said, how could Shmuel have what do you call it, been suspected? No, how could Shmuel have suspected Shaul of wanting to kill him? So we learned once before your call, once you start doing one Aveira, it's a slippery slope to the next Aveira. Once he didn't destroy Amalek, he already sends the second time he second-guessed the Navi. What's your...
He killed the Kabbalah.
And then he killed Nov. It turned out he killed out Nov. So why wouldn't he... And that's 86. I think it was 86, right? 86 Kohanim. So one Shmuel? An old Shmuel for that? Remember, he already wasn't able to do the circus. Older guy already. Yeah, it's older. It's mamish. You see what's going on in the Alma de Shikra.
52.
So, Shlomo Melch also died at 52. Right? So the Alma de Shikra is a world where we only look, what's Pshat Alma Shikra? We just look at what's on the surface. The surface is so compelling. What you see is so compelling because we are human beings and we are, what do you call it, stimulated by what we see. We're influenced by what we see. That's where we're human beings. The Alma de Shikra is everything you see. In other words, for sure, you know, the Yesod is, you know, as opposed to the secular world says, what you see is what you get. In Jewish world, what you see is mamish, not what is. You know, what's the, you know, in Yiddishkeit, you believe half of what you see and nothing of what you hear. Right? And only half of what you see. Right? Because the Alma Shikra fools you. So Shmuel was saying this. Listen, Shmuel wasn't in the Alma de Shikra. He's a Navi. He was always in the world of truth. But when he's living in the Alma de Shikra, here's the point. You have to know you're talking to people who live in the Alma de Shikra. In other words, if you're a tzaddik, a Rebbe, he's always in the Alma de Emes. He's in the true world, even in this world. The others, tzaddikim, even in this world, they're in the real world. Because they're up there. They're just playing games over here. They know that this is a game place. But they know they're talking to people who really believe that the Alma de Shikra is the real world. So you have to be careful how you speak to them. Be careful how you speak to them. I knew because we're in the Alma de Shikra and you are in the throes of the Alma de Shikra. How do I see the Shikra? You, when a Navi tells you to kill everybody, you decide not to. Why? Because of what you see. The Alma de Shikra. That's what you give into. You let the Yetzirah create an Alma de Shikra that you buy into. So if you buy into that, believe me, if I would have told you the truth, if I would have told you from the Olam Emes to the Alma de Shikra, you would have killed me. So you learn a lot from this. Two points. And this is something that rabbis can attest to. You know, hopefully a rabbi who learns a lot of Torah even though he may have his own personal struggles with the Alma de Shikra and the Alma de Emes, but whatever he's telling you, most likely is from the Alma de Emes. So the Alma de Emes. Now he's talking to congregants who live in the Alma de Shikra. So if a rabbi will speak the Emes, so what's going to happen? So nowadays we don't kill rabbis, but we fire them. You know, a board of directors is for sure 99% of the time, if they're board of directors, they're directing you. You have to remember the story. I'll just tell you the story. In Tells, many, many, many moons ago, Tells Yeshiva, they had a board of sponsors. Yeah, whatever, the president, vice president, board of, a lot of Balbatim gave money, board of sponsors. So, but the yeshiva did all the policy. So one day, I don't remember who, one of the board members spoke to a gifter and had a complaint, said, things in yeshiva should be run a little differently. So a gifter, in his true style, said to him, "I don't believe you've read what it says on the top of the letterhead. You are called a board of sponsors, not a board of directors. You don't direct the future of the yeshiva. You sponsor, you're a board of sponsors. Your job is to raise the money. That's your job. And you tell us the best way for you to raise money. We'll listen to everything you say about how to raise money. Board of sponsors, yes. Board of directors, you're not." Right? Unfortunately, many, many shuls, it is a board of directors. The board of directors, 99.9% live in the Alma de Shikra. And you see it all the time. A person can be a regular Baal Bas. All of a sudden, he's given the power of being board of directors. Directors? All of a sudden, the Alma de Shikra takes over. And then, whatever the rabbi says is no good. Therefore, the rabbi, if he wants to keep his job, has to speak to people who are living in the Alma de Shikra. Not that the rabbi will say lies. So if the rabbi wants to get up and say what the emes is, right? Then the board of directors say, rabbi, if you keep speaking this way, we're going to fire you. Stop telling people not to be Mechal Shabbos. Stop telling people to keep kosher, because there's people in the shul who go and keep kosher and Mechal Shabbos. Please stop talking that way. And I know that the president has an affair with somebody. Don't talk about that. And we don't want, if you talk about that, we're going to fire you. So what does the rabbi say? He says, "Oh, you're not. We're very charitable people, and we wear nice ties. We're in touch with Israel. And so he doesn't say any lies, but the truth, he doesn't tell you the whole truth. And that's the kind of rabbis that shuls get, because he's afraid to open up his mouth. Afraid to open his mouth, because the rabbi is speaking from Alma de Emes. He's speaking to the world Alma de Shikra, and that's what Shmuel Navi is teaching us. Not that he lies, can't lie. The rabbi can't get up and say, it's okay to be Mechal Shabbos. That he can't say. Just doesn't talk about it. Just doesn't talk about it. Right? But, so that's number one. That will explain why rabbis don't tell the whole truth. Because their mamash afraid that these guys will kill him. And killing is on many levels. Just in one way, right? What does we say? You talk Lashon Hara, it's worse than killing somebody. For sure, board of directors are very yoytze on those mitzvahs. Very yoytze on that. Mamash, kill a rabbi. They kill him. They destroy his credibility. You can imagine, they fire a rabbi, how does he expect to get a job afterwards? Why did they fire you? They fired you because the board lived in the Alma de Shikra. That's why there's always contention in rabbis and boards. The board lives in the Alma de Shikra, the rabbi lives in the Alma de Emes. So a smart rabbi will not tell them the truth. But then there's a second part to that. Because Shaul lived in the Alma de Shikra and wasn't able to be makabel what Shmuel had to say. Now Shmuel, of course, judges everyone favorably. When he spoke to Shaul the first time, and he was the king, he was hoping that Shaul too was living in the Alma de Emes. That's what a king should be, living in the world of truth, and willing to listen to the Navi. He lives in the world of truth. So in the beginning, Shmuel told him exactly as is. You will go to Amalek, you will destroy them totally. That was mamish Alma de Emes. He didn't mince his words, he mamish didn't cover code. He said, you gotta do it exactly the way I said. That was Alma de Emes, hoping he would hear it from the Alma de Emes. He didn't. Once Shmuel saw that was not there anymore, I can't talk to him this way anymore. But once that happens, you should know one thing. That person now who lives in Alma de Shikra, he loses his lifeline. And the Navi can't talk to him in the Emes way anymore. And once the Navi doesn't talk to you in the Emes way, then you could do all kinds of stupid things like Shaul HaMelech did. And then at the end of the day, he blames the rabbi, the Navi. Why didn't you tell me he was going to David? You imagine what's going to happen after 120 years. There's going to be people, congregants from shuls coming up to the next world. And she's going to say, why didn't you do this, why didn't you do this? And you think they're going to sit back and take it from Hashem? You say, well, the rabbi never talked about it. If the rabbi would have once talked about it, I would have done it. Then Hashem's going to show you the tape. He's going to say, he did. The first year he was the rabbi, he talked to it, and boy, did you straighten him out. You called him into your office, and you were mavayishim, mavazahim. And you said, you want to be have a job here? You better toe the line. So he told you a line. There's no telling you. From what you see from Shaul, and again, with all due respect to Shaul, because he was still a tzaddik. But Shaul was a tzaddik, could act so foolishly. Can you imagine regular Balabatim how foolishly they're going to act? Can you imagine how foolish they are? You know, that's why people in conventional boards, Baruch Hashem, our board now is very good. They know their board of sponsors. They understand it. They understand, right? But Moshe's board of directors, it's the kind of Lashon Hara that goes, people don't want to be on boards. Because they know it's all Lashon Hara. 99.9, there's maybe a couple of good ones out there. And therefore, good people don't want to be on boards. That's a catch-22. So what happens? All the Baal Lashon Hara get onto the boards. So it doesn't work. Because they live in the Alma de Shikra. So the rabbi has to know how to sidestep around there. He never really says anything to anybody. And then people get what they get. But later they'll come with complaints. If you only would have told me. Yeah. So I told everybody on Yom Kippur how I felt. And that's it. Now I'm not going to tell anybody anymore. That's it. Comes next Yom Kippur, I'm going to speak to the Alma de Shikra. I'm not going to say any lies. I'm just going to tell people what they want to hear. But I'll tell you, if you really want to hear what the truth, you come to me privately. I'm happy to give everybody the Alma de Emes. Happy to. So far, I haven't seen too many volunteers for that. So it's okay. It's okay. But that's mamish.
Is that better?
You know, it's, you know what? You don't have a choice because it's a lot worse if boards will start killing rabbis. You know, I'm just saying. You see from Shmuel, he's not criticized for the way he behaved. He understood this. You have no answer. Believe me, if Shaul would have, you know, at the end of the day, you'll see in a minute, at the end of the day, Shaul will end up in a good place. At the end of the day, through his death, which will be a kapara, he will end up in a good place.
But Shmuel told him that you will.
No, but that, why? Because, but had Shaul killed, you can kill even all the Kohanim, you can still go to Olam Haba. There's one rule, man, you kill a Navi, you're done. You kill a Navi? Forget it. that you're finished. Mamish finished. So Shmuel knows, you know, you think it bothered Shmuel if he would get killed by Shaul? Personally. Shmuel's selfish interest. He has no selfish interest.
Right.
As far as Shmuel's concerned, I should tell him the truth. Tell him the truth. If he kills me, he kills me. You know, Hashem protects me. And if Hashem wants me to die, he wants me to die. Then we have the Navim before the Beis HaMikdash. They killed Zechariah. They didn't want to hear what Zechariah had to say. They killed him. Once you do that, you're done. You're done. There's no hope. They killed Chur with the Cheta Eagle. And why did Aaron play along with them and not criticize them severely? You know, if they kill me, then they're finished. Because Aaron wasn't just a Kohen, he was a Navi. You kill a Navi, you're done for. Like, forget it. Don't even expect Olam Haba. Like, you're done for. So he figures, okay, what's best for Shaul? Shmuel always wondered, what's best for Shaul? What's best for Shaul is that if he kills me, he's done. Now, he's still going to lose the Melucha, but he has a lot of ways to lose it. He could have given it over nicely to David. He could have done Shuvah. There's a whole bunch of things he could have done. And he was mispalel for him and this and that. And ultimately, as you'll see, Shaul was a good guy. He was a good guy, made mistakes, big mistakes, but a good guy. But you'll see, he will get a kapara. He will get a kapara. And he does sit in a very beautiful place in Olam Haba. So Shmuel did act. You know, you can only act as good as the clientele will allow you to. It's such a mussar. Mamash, you should take this piece this year, play it to every board. Every shul board should hear this. Okay, those of you listening on kosher too, go send it to your board members and tell them what they're doing to destroy the efficacy of their rabbis. Right? So that's clear. So it's a beautiful measure. It's unbelievable. Baruch Hashem was able to find it. Yeah.
I mean, didn't we say recently that if one speaks ill about a rabbi, they suffer also? I think it was just in the last couple of weeks. We brought that out.
Sure, I mean,
you know, unless you do tshuva, if you speak
yeah, I spoke about that Shabbos morning.
Yeah,
that was more from.
But it's very similar kind of concept.
It's a similar concept, but here it's mamish coming out of a medrash. Otherwise, you give no explanation. How could it's always a rabbi has to know he's living with people who live in the alma de shikra, in the world of falseness. A person lives in the world of falseness. You got to talk to them differently. The people now, hopefully, a rabbi will teach people how to learn to live in the world of truth.
Teach
them a story like this. Teach them a story like this, and to see what Shaul gave up, what Shaul had to go through. The rabbi criticizes people. Why is rabbi criticizing? Because he doesn't want them to suffer. He doesn't want Hashem to punish them. That's why I think the rabbi feels guilty. He says, I should tell them what I said at the end of the kinos. You know, look, at the end of kinos, you could say what you want, because those are people who are at least a little closer to the Alma de Emes. It's the truth. It's the truth. If a woman doesn't go to the mikvah, the two, a husband and wife, are damned for karis for the rest of their lives. That's the Emes. Go tell people the Emes. I don't know if they're ready to hear the Emes. Couldn't say that on Yom Kippur, right? You can't hear the Emes. But people who could hear the Emes, the rabbi's job is to teach people to appreciate, to hear, to live in the world of Emes. And if they could learn to live in the world of Emes, then the rabbi could tell them the words from the world of Emes. That's really his job. Really, the rabbi's job is to try to teach. That's what we try to do. So we try to bring in some chassidus so you can learn the value of living in the world of Emes. If once you're living in the world of Emes, then you can maybe hear some Emes. But till you're there, you're not going to. Okay, let's continue. There's still lots of really beautiful things here. Then the Medrash picks up. Still in Pasuk Yates. It looks like we're not finishing the parak. It's okay. You don't have to. It's all Torah. It says, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Okay. So Rashi has very famous words over here, all based on the Medrash. Let me read the Rashi. Atov v'nech imi. One word is added. Bim mechitza si. In my mechitza. In my area. My area. And what does this really mean? So it brings on, Radak elaborates a little bit more. He says, Shetiu meisim kamo shani meis. You will be dead like me. One answers you, you'll be with me. You're going to be dead like me. The Gemara there says, no, imi b'mechitza si, me in my mechitza. So what does that mean? So the Radak brings now from the Gemara, it's Gemara in the Medrash. It says, b'schar sheterid l'melchama amanas lamus, for the reward that you're going to battle knowing you're going to die. Lo tivrach, you're not going to run away. Yechupa l'chavan nov v'erkan, it will be forgiven to you the sin of killing out the city of Nov. V'tia imi b'mechitza si atzadikim, you'll be with me with all the other tzadikim. And there's two medrashim that seem to be conflicting, but they're not. We can resolve them. But Shaul, the medrash, picks up a little bit what's missing in other Gemaras. The medrash says, so Shaul says, so what would happen if I run away? Will I be able to escape? We're going to lose the battle, right? So now he's trying to figure out, what are all the angles here? What are the possibilities here? Maybe right now I'm in the forest, let me and my sons run away. The Jews will wake up tomorrow, they'll see there's no king, there's a face, whatever. Can I escape? She says, you will. If you try to escape, you will be able to escape. But if you accept upon yourself the judgment, then tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Meaning with me sitting in Gan Eden. So now you have an option. You want to sit in Gan Eden? There's only one way you're going to sit in Gan Eden. You got to go and get your punishment. Just like a person who's a murderer, where people have to get a kapara. You need a kapara, man. That kapara is, you're going to have to kill yourself in battle. At the end of the day, we're going to see he's wounded to the point that he has to finish himself off before the police didn't kill him. But that's going to be a kapara. For what you did, you got to have a kapara. So you got a choice. You can run away, save your skin, and continue to live in the world of falseness. Or, at least now, Demis, now you need a kapara. No Bezdin's going to kill you. You have to enforce it yourself. Do you want that kapara or not? So Gemara says that. So that's one thing.
Doesn't he have an obligation to save himself if he can, though?
Not if already Hashem says you're a Ben Mavet. No, yeah, he'll go to war. He'll fight. No. The police team are fighting. What's a king's obligation if the police team are fighting? You have to go to battle. What do you mean? How can a king not go to battle? How can a king not go to battle? You have to defend. First of all, Shaul will go to battle. He'll probably kill a few thousand policemen before they get him. You know, he will, you know, but you've got to be the king. You got to lead the troops. What's the Shiloh? Got to lead the troops. You know, just because there's a prophecy doesn't mean you don't do what you're supposed to do. You need a kapara. That's it. You go to battle, you do what happens, and just because you know the future doesn't mean you have to change. That's what he's saying. You need a kapara. That's one medrash. The Gemara in Brachos seems to say something different, which we won't be able to resolve today. Gemara says, "Kol oisa dvar avera misbayishbo." Someone does an avera, but he is embarrassed of his avera. Usually when you do an avera, you're not very embarrassed. You think you did a mitzvah. But then later, when you become embarrassed for your avera, moichlin loy alavenesav, it forgives your averas. And the proof is from this pasuk, or this topic. Why? Because when Shaul mentioned that he spoke to the prophets, they didn't answer him. He spoke to the dreamers, didn't answer. But he didn't mention it. He spoke to the Urim v'Tumim. Why? Because he was too ashamed to talk about it. Because he killed out the priests. And he showed real remorse and shame to not speak about it. So from that you see someone who is ashamed of what they did. They were embarrassed of what they did. Hashem is Michael that Avera. So the Mefarshim say, how do you know this? Let me just wait on that. So how does the mechanics work? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains in his Sichos Musar, he says that you can be forgiven for this Avera, even though there's different versions of the Gemara. Some have a version of Mochem al Kol Avoinasov, all its Averas. The Meiri over there says, not all, for the Avera that you are ashamed about. He says, why? Because why does Hashem want to punish a person? Why does Hashem have to punish a person? Only to give you rebuke, to say you're doing the wrong thing. Fine. That's why initially Hashem punishes you, to wake you up. But if you are ashamed from what you've done, then you woke yourself up already. You don't need to get the punishment anymore. If you would do real tshuva, if he would have done real tshuva, he still could have done tshuva. He didn't do tshuva in normal ways. So now Hashem says there's only one tshuva left. Now you've got to the point, your only tshuva is, you got to go to battle and die. But that's at the end. But first, we'll see. See, there seems to be conflicting medrashim here. It isn't, but it seems to be conflicting. One medrash says, the only way you can get out of this is by dying. This medrash, though, is saying, I was embarrassed, so I got kapara. Seems in this medrash, he doesn't have to die. This medrash doesn't talk about him going to die. The Gemara just says, he was ashamed, and therefore, what Shmuel says, you know, you'll be with me in Olam Haba tomorrow. Why? Because he was ashamed. He was ashamed. So it seems to be a conflict. Now another interesting shot is embarrassment. We know, yeah, you're supposed to die. But when a person's embarrassed, what do you say? If you talk Lashon Hara about someone, it's like killing him, right? Because the blood changes, your face changes from red to white. Remember, you're shamed, you're red as a beet, then it flushes out. That's like you killed him. You shed his blood, right? So certainly, if a guy deserves to die for an avera, let's say, but now he's so ashamed what he did, he mamish is like he killed himself. If you feel that shame, that tremendous shame, let's say on another level. Okay, I know you're upset when people kill people. Well, guy's a Machal Shabbos. Guy's a Machal Shabbos, should also die. But if he doesn't die for that, then you're okay with it because it didn't hurt anybody else. See, guy's Machal Shabbos, it's terrible things, right? And so he should die. He should die. So we'll say he's not going to die. But if mom is ashamed for what he did, it's like he killed himself. Yeah. You know, there was once a quick story with a Rebbe, fast story, with a Rebbe that the terrible, terrible sinner. I forget exactly the whole story. So he says, how do I get kapara? So you know how to get kapara? I think it was like Yom Kippur. He says, you go right up to the center bima in front of hundreds of people, and you tell them every terrible thing you've done in your life, you'll get kapara. Yeah. So the guy, mom, is just thinking, and he's getting into it. He says, I'm going to go. And he's starting to shake. He's starting to tremble. His mom's sweating like bullets. He's like, what's going to happen to me? But after that, and his mom, she's crying. His mom's shaking. He comes, mamish, up to the center. He's straight open his mouth. Then a hand from behind the Rebbe says, it's enough. We've already accomplished it. Same idea. Next time we meet in 3.5 weeks, we have to resolve, 3.5 weeks, we have to resolve the contradiction. One Gemara seems to say he got kapara for being ashamed. The other one says he got kapara for dying. We'll have to see how that gets resolved. But anyway, a powerful lesson today. Can you, Shelly, do me a favor? Take that.